Transmission commence in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Level 7.
RandomChatter.com presents
the Strategic Homeland Intervention Enforcement and Logistics Division.
Do you copy?
Perimeter breach.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case files.
Authorizing.
Just call us S.H.I.E.L.D.
Access granted.
Colson, get back to base.
Welcome back, agents. I trust you've all been suitably briefed on the most recent encounter. We'll be your hosts on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files. I'm Director Shepard.
And I'm Director Stolte.
Okay, and you've been authorized to undergo debriefing on the most recent mission from Agent Coulson and his operatives presented to the public as a dramatic hour-long television series known as Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Fortunately, you've all been cleared to know the truth. Josh,
The truth.
You doing okay, man? You sound a little out there.
Oh, man. I'm good, man. I'm good. I'm ready.
All right. There's one piece of business I got to take care of up front here. We've had a number of emails. Actually, some of them might have been tweets just from fans.
I love the fans. I love them.
I know they're great. They love the show. They would just prefer that we don't sing anymore.
Wait, what?
They just would prefer that we don't sing on the show anymore. Because they tune in to listen to us talk about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., not to let us sing and stuff like that.
Mm, okay.
Is that groovy?
Well, I think that's just a man keeping us down.
Well, maybe. I think some of them might have been women, but I can't confirm that. But
okay.
Why don't we just talk about what the episode is that we're going to talk about this week? Just give us the little intro.
Sounds good.
Yeah, just give
that.
Us the
we
intro.
We can do that.
Okay.
Okay.
And then we'll
get on to
discuss it. Yeah.
We can get on to discuss it. I can't wait. This is exciting. So we're into season 4 now, episode 4. Let me stand next to your fire. October 18th, 2016 is when this gig happened, man. Yeah, man. We had that gig. That was a good gig, too.
That was a great gig.
All right. And you know what else? It was written by Matt Owens, Brad Turner. He was the agent. I mean, the director. He was the director, yeah. And they had a groovy time, baby. It was a groovy time. All right. Now listen, Ada. Why you care for me? Watch dogs start to hack. Lola chases cars, I like that. Ghost Rider has a burning desire. Let me stand next to your fire.
Let me stand next to your fire. Let me stand next to your fire. Let me stand next to your fire.
Do you remember what I literally just got through saying this.
That we're doing the show.
Right.
Something about fan. Oh, you know what? I do remember. I'm sorry. I was just feeling it. It was just there. All right. No, I'm ready.
Need to put the bowl down.
Okay. Okay.
Take a deep breath. Just kind of clear your sinuses out.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm good. I'm
okay.
Good. Let me take these glasses off and this afro pill. Hold on 1 second. Okay. All right. You know what? I'm okay now. I'm good. I think I'm ready to kind of talk about this episode, which was a hot episode, man. Let me tell you.
Whoa. Yes, it was.
All right. So let me just explain real quick what we're talking about here after that good fun here. Daisy, she's in bad shape.
Yeah. Okay. Also, they don't want us to do any more understatements either on this show, I think.
Yeah, that's true. Okay. You know, she has very cleverly manipulated Simmons to get her to help out a little. And as a little bonus, got her an apartment, so that was kind of nice.
Yeah.
But you know, she's been bruised, chased, shot, and quaked. I mean, she's a mess. But plus, she's discovered that the watchdogs have been hacking into S.H.I.E.L.D. That is right.
Yep.
That is some power right there. I don't know how they're doing that yet. They've been getting the names and locations of Inhumans, and it looks like their old friend James is next on the list.
Mm.
You remember James?
Oh, yeah. I love James.
From last season. Yeah. Catches things on fire, right? Ooh, that would be a good name for the let me stand next to you. sorry. Almost broke out in song there.
Oh.
No, Coulson and Mac, they're trying to get some information from Robbie Reyes' uncle Eli. He's in prison. Remember that? But they really get lucky when they manage to get Ghost Rider himself to help them out. And they're going to need that help too, because it turns out that James, he may not be in as much danger as they thought. So they're going to have to seek out a very ancient mystical book that could be very dangerous in the wrong hands. No, hopefully they can get May back up on her feet soon. Dr. Radcliffe, he's going to get Ada to help her out, because he's got to test her out, right, to see if she's as convincing as he really thinks he is. And he may just pull it off. Yeah, unless Simmons shows up or something.
Oh, right, right.
Yeah.
Hey, that mystical book they're talking about, that's the Joy of Cooking, right?
The Joy of Cooking, yes. 7th edition.
Best one. That's the one I've got. Yep.
Yeah, it's got the gluten-free recipes in it, so it's all good.
All right, little bit of news that you discovered as a lifelong subscriber to Entertainment Weekly. The most recent issue
has seemed that long. It doesn't.
it's been going on for quite a while. I know you get it all the time, but they've got Doctor Strange on the cover, I think, right?
Oh yeah, double issue this week with Doctor Strange, just lovingly looking at you. Just Benedict Cumberbatch's eyes are burning into my soul. Yes, I want to snuggle magically with him. But the actual article, apart from talking about Doctor Strange, is the 50 most powerful superheroes. Ah. So what they've done here, this was cool, because I went out in my mailbox, I saw the Doctor Strange already, right? Saw that, and then, wait a minute, most powerful superheroes, I bet you there's people in here we talk about. Yeah. So I opened that up, and now, so what they've done is they've kind of devised this system, this where they have different categories that they can rank them in. So it's not like just a popular vote kind of thing. I actually really like this. This is way better than just ranking by people, you know, logging in and voting on people.
Right. But I think it's a little bit of a disservice to call it 50 most powerful superheroes, because I look at the list, and if you think about like powerful superheroes, you know, like Superman is one that always comes to mind, and he's, what is he, third? Something like that?
Yeah, yeah. And
Dr. Manhattan's number 50. And like Dr. Manhattan can change the, you know, the order of the universe. So
I thought the exact same thing. But powerful is probably not the right
adjective,
word. Maybe influential, maybe.
Right. So tell them really quickly what the categories were that everything's ranked on here that is then aggregated.
So they've got the very first and the most point value category is cultural impact. How much has this character impacted the people culturally throughout comic books and movies?
That's clever. I've never heard anyone doing anything with something like that in it, so I thought that was cool.
And it's like I said, it's a really good way to look at these characters, because this is really what they're all about, is these categories. And now all the smaller categories are worth 10 points, and they are bankability, design. I like that one. Modern relevance, so that's a really good one for just now, because some of these would have been in a different order back in the, you know, the 70s, 80s, and 90s.
Sure.
Mythology.
Okay.
Their nemesis.
Sees.
originality, personality, and powers. So all of those nine categories plus the cultural impact equals a total of 100 points. That's the most you can get. So
who's number one, just so people know?
Well, who's number one? And again, you know, I do not consider these spoilers, people. So just listen and join with me. Get an Entertainment Weekly and then understand why by reading the article. But the number one, which I was fascinated to see and very impressed, was Wonder Woman with a score of 90.3.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, she got a full 20 for cultural impact and a full 10 for a modern relevance.
And I agree with both of those. I mean, cultural impact, if you think about, number one, how long she has been around as a female superhero, and that she is still really, really important. And I think that her appearance in Batman versus Superman really made a big impact on that. So,
yeah.
But and the upcoming movie, of course.
Yeah.
So, and Linda Carter.
So we're talking about it here because our favorite director of S.H.I.E.L.D., Nick Fury, who's not – really quite a superhero in the normal sense, but he made the list, and he actually did way better than I thought he would have. He made it to number 31 out of 50.
Yeah. 62.4 was his score.
And while we're talking about him, I figured I'd just mention a few of the other current superheroes that you might be interested in. The Netflix heroes, just because they're also kind of TV heroes with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Daredevil came in at number 16. Luke Cage came in at number 29. Jessica Jones at 39. And The Punisher at number 44. I don't think I saw Iron Fist on there because a lot of people probably don't know who he is.
Not yet.
But the cover boy, Bandersnatch, Cumberboot, Doctor Strange came in at number 26. Just a little over halfway. So really great list. Thank you for sharing that.
It was very cool. And the one thing I do like, right at the very end, I like when they take the whole article's list of people and they put them all onto one spreadsheet, you know, chart kind of thing. And you can see all the numbers right next to each other and the totals and stuff.
So the article actually has a little bio on each of them, I guess, huh?
Right. And then you get to the end and you see all the numbers. You know, you can look at this big matrix-looking thing with all the categories. But awesome. Anyway, so check that out. Entertainment Weekly, it's a double issue. You know, they're probably giving the employees of Entertainment Weekly a week off. So it'll be around for a couple weeks.
What's date or the number on that then?
It's number 1436 and 1437. Okay. They always give them two numbers when they're double issues. And it's October 21st and 28th.
Okay.
So it should be on the shelves for a little while.
For at least another week. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's get started talking about Let Me Stand Next to Your Fire. I've been I love the title. I've been looking forward to this one. And once we found out Ghost Rider was showing up this season, it's like, that sounds pretty interesting. Obviously, as people may have recognized from our little intro, from your going off book there, the title comes from the Jimi Hendrix song Fire, which a lot of people call Let Me Stand Next to Your Fire, but the actual name of that song is just Fire.
And by the way, you can download me sing that on iTunes. That's my flip side song. My A side song is Why Do Birds. So that's a good version.
The Carpenters?
Yeah.
That one?
Been working on that one, so
nice. Wow, you're really going after two entirely different markets there. I really am impressed.
Hey, you gotta go with what feels right to you. So all right, so anyway.
so first off, I just really thought that the episode kind of fulfilled the promise of the San Diego Comic-Con trolley art. If you recall, during the summer, we were talking about this trolley art where it was a big fiery chain. And, of course, we're all like, oh, yeah, that's James. It's Hellfire. And other people were like, no, man, it's Ghost Rider. And it's like, well, yeah, it's Ghost Rider, but they're not going to do Ghost Rider on S.H.I.E.L.D. What are you smoking?
Boy, were we wrong.
Yeah. And
I don't know that we've been more wrong on something we've said on this show.
I understood everybody's reasoning, but, you know, just – based on where they went with the show or where they've gone with the show up to that point, it was like, I just don't see them going in that direction, but here they are. And so, you know, shame on us, I guess. They will forever be able to say that they pulled off a great character reveal on the show. But the fact is the chain does belong to Hellfire. And it does belong to Ghost Rider in this episode. It was a great little link between the two of them. And I thought that moment when James lights up the chain and Robbie shows up and then just takes it from him, I was like, oh, this is getting good. So,
and when I saw him take the chain from him, Ghost Rider take the chain, that right, I immediately thought of that trolley.
That's exactly
that is the very first thing I thought of.
That is exactly the same thing that happened to me. It's spooky how our brains work on that. All right. Well, I want to definitely come back and I want to talk more about James and I want to talk more about Ghost Rider, but a lot of other interesting stuff going on in this episode. Let's talk first about Uncle Eli. We heard a little bit about him last week. Daisy had done some research on Robbie and found out that there was this Uncle Eli that he had that was involved in some altercation. He beat up some guy, though he doesn't feel like he's doing time for it, but he didn't feel like he was wrong for doing this, I guess. So we find out about him. He's an electrical engineer, and his connection to the Momentum Labs incident, which is however long ago. You'll recall we saw the there was a photo we were talking about with the other members of the Momentum Labs team. And
Robbie Reyes grabbed off the wall or the bulletin board on his way out, right?
Yep. And if you look at our Facebook site, I put the picture up and identified, I think it was four of the ghosts that we saw were four of the people very clearly. And there were three other people that were unidentified. One really tall dude, and we thought, or at least I made the supposition, it looked a lot like the director. That is not the case. I'm actually glad to be wrong about that, because it probably would have been kind of convenient for that to happen. And I feel like the fact that the director's an Inhuman and they're dealing with Inhuman storylines with the Watchdogs and then the Ghostwriter stuff, people keep asking if he's an Inhuman, but he's like, no, man, why do people keep asking this? And so that they're kind of keeping Inhumans and Ghostwriter separate, except for the little fight, of course, that happened in this episode.
Right. Well, I'm kind of glad they didn't go that way too, but it was a really good idea. You know, that was a really good theory that you had, and it really did look like him. So,
yeah, at least in the, you know, in the version of the picture that we could see, we got a nice close up of the picture, you know, lit a little bit differently. And the tall gentleman was identified as Lucy's husband, Joe. Lucy being the female ghost that we've been watching. So, it also turns out that the gentleman in the back row on the left is Uncle Eli, and he was there when Momentum Labs had this accident. I guess they were using the, you know, what we can assume is that they were using the Darkhold to make energy out of nothing, which, based on what we, based on the way that the magical stuff works in this show, my guess is that really the Darkhold is a portal to another, you know, when you use stuff in it, it's a portal to another dimension, much like on Agent Carter, where they open up the dimension and the, what was that black stuff called that, you know, would come out?
The dark matter.
Dark matter.
Dark,
yeah.
Dark something. Sorry.
Dark force, I think might have been it. And dark,
yeah, I don't know.
So I think what they were doing was they were actually creating energy by pulling it from this other universe or something like that.
You know, I will point something out that was said in this episode by Coulson when he was talking to Mac. He said, in my experience, gods usually turn out to be aliens or something like that. So it could also be to another planet. Like,
oh, like Ma-Beth.
Thor and like Ma-Beth too. Why can I ever say Ma-Beth? Were you a little curious still about Eli's prison situation and why he actually got in there? It didn't seem like his story fit his character as much. Like, there's a lot more to it than we've been told so far.
I think there is, but so let me see if I can recap what I think we've been told. So he comes from from like East LA or, you know, some lower income area of Los Angeles. And it sounds like he's actually, studied and, you know, made good and like was able to, step beyond where a lot of people in his, peer group could get out. You know, like he was the one that got out and got a nice job and, you know, and by studying and stuff. And he got this job as an electrical engineer. They were doing this weird research work and he had some altercation, some disagreement with Joseph, who was leading the project. And he and Joseph fought and he basically put Joseph into a coma. But also, whatever they were doing exploded, apparently killing the other six individuals, but they weren't actually killed. They were transmutated into energy or whatever it is. And he's in jail now because really he beat up this guy and, you know, but it sounds like he was really trying to stop what was going on. But yeah, there's still elements with how, you know, how did Robbie get involved with Ghostwriter? And maybe there's something that Eli's not telling us.
Yeah. I want to know what the altercation was about a little bit more.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm sure we're going to get into that. I'm sure it had to do with, you know, clean energy, you know, and
Eli knows more about what happened than he's letting on.
So Lucy really wants now she is looking to get the book back, assuming, I believe, that they can use that to free themselves or, you know, put themselves back. She also does not seem concerned that her husband, like, her husband's in this coma. She's like, she sticks her hands or fingers in his head to wake him up, you know, and like, I can't see that being a good thing.
Yeah, I don't recommend that.
So I think, you know, by the virtue of them, A, being imprisoned in those little energy cubes or whatever for so long, and the fact that they're incorporeal, I think she may have gone a little cuckoo. Your grandfather's work was cuckoo.
I think they're on the edge of something weird.
Let's see, as a quick aside here in that whole element of the storyline, we got to see, as advertised on the ads, Lola versus the Hell Charger, which that was some pretty sweet car stunts that we saw them racing around. Every time I know the Hell Charger, if it gets into an accident, it can heal itself, but I was really concerned for Lola because, like, I don't know, you've got this really nice car, how are you going to stop this other car? What are you going to, like, pull in front of it, like tap it or something? You don't want to mess up your car like that. So I thought Coulson did a good job of kind of leading, I guess, Robbie to a spot, or at least taking advantage of where he knew they were going and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. I liked that nice long car chase. It kind of gave me a break. You know, I take notes and stuff and jot stuff down while I'm watching it. And it gave me a nice chance to just sit back and kind of watch the action for a few minutes. So it was fun. And it was cool to see those two cars racing around.
And of course, the interchange between Mac and Coulson was funny as always. You know, Mac really, really, really wants to drive, and he's sorry he didn't get the I was hoping she was going to fly, but then he said that he hadn't fixed the flight capacitors or whatever in Lola. And my thought is Coulson's actually seen one too many Fast and Furious films, because after they catch up to him, he's like, so what? I get his car now? You know, like they trade pink slips or something like that. Not sure that's exactly how it works, but who knows? But that allows them to, as Coulson says, I thought it was a really nice turn of phrase, make his own deal with the devil. And he was very excited because he got to see Ghost Rider finally, because he loves that kind of stuff.
Yes, he does. I was awesome. I don't know. This one got me really excited in a bunch of different scenes of the show. It made me shout out in excitement for a bunch of different scenes, not just at the end, but the race was good. The meetup was good. Uh-huh. Him coming across him in the prison parking lot, that was a little convenient, but whatever.
I like the way they shot it. So it's like, Robbie's cruising up in slow motion, and Mac kind of turns in slow motion. It's like, whoa, wait a second, that's the guy. And then he peels out and takes off, you know? So, I thought that was it was a little convenient that they happened to meet that way, but, that's some of the, you know, it's not as hokey as some plot lines in some superhero TV shows and stuff like this. I think,
oh no,
it seems to work. Right. So they get Robbie to help out and to talk to his Uncle Eli and get a little information that Coulson was unable to get out. And then they use Robbie and Ghost Rider to move in on James, which was very timely, given what you mentioned before, that James turned out to not necessarily be working with S.H.I.E.L.D. in this case. So that's a little unfortunate, but it's within his nature, I guess. He's that's the kind of guy he's been, as we've seen in the show. So I thought that was pretty cool. Do you think, though, that Ghost Rider is now an ally of S.H.I.E.L.D.? Is he going to be working with them, or is it just going to be – because they both kind of seem to be heading for the same goal. And are they going to keep working with him, or are they going to let him go and Robbie's going to go off and try to do his own thing and they'll probably meet back up later? Or what do you think's going on with that?
I think they'll work separately but assist each other, you know, as they cross paths. I don't see Robbie as much of a team player. It would just not really be in his character. You know, I mean, I can, like this week he helped them, because it was useful for his purposes.
Uh-huh.
Right. And I think he will continue to do that since they're both kind of after the same thing. And ultimately, you know, I think he even mentioned that, he's thinking that if he can, atone for what his uncle did, that maybe his curse would be lifted.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And so I think, you know, that's what his goal is right now, but he's a good guy. I mean, he is a hero.
Uh-huh.
And so I think he will help them because he knows it's the right thing to do.
And he's honorable about it as well.
Yeah. Yeah. But I don't think he's going to like suit up and be one of the members of the team. And I don't mean like a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent or anything like that, but I don't think he's going to be like working with them and planning with them and doing all that. I think he'll be kind of off to the side and as more of an ally than a team member.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. And what about with Daisy coming back to the team, because he seems slightly interested in Daisy more than her brother wants her to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But do you think that's going to play any factor into it?
Into him helping?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it will. I think it will. And I think – no, he wanted to help her originally. She left on her own because of what Gabe said. And so, I think he was still – interested in kind of being a part of her quest or her just, you know, having a relationship with her, not like a boyfriend kind of thing, just as another ally. Right.
So it's just like a flame.
Yeah, exactly. but I think that they will, her being a part of S.H.I.E.L.D. again, as it looks like it's going to be, he'll see that. And that will be kind of a, I don't know, deciding factor to show that Coulson's an honorable guy and, you know, that her S.H.I.E.L.D. friends are trustworthy because they're helping Daisy and he knows about Daisy. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of that connection that he needs to put a little bit of faith and trust in Coulson and his team.
Okay. Yeah. Right. Because up to that point, like, Eli and Robbie really didn't want to have anything to do with Coulson. Robbie, like you said, I think saw that their goals coincided and that's why he helped. And mm-hmm. you know, because Daisy trusted him, Coulson trusted him. She does seem like that kind of bridge, the character bridge for these characters to work
right.
with.
Right. I think it's going to be actually a lot harder for Daisy to work with them than it is for Robbie.
Interesting. Interesting.
That just sounded like I described a CW show there. Daisy and Robbie are going to have a really difficult time working with everybody. But there's been some bridges burned. There's another pun between Daisy and the team. So that I think they're going to have to heal, especially with Mac, and maybe even Coulson a little bit.
Hmm. I do want to touch on that a little bit as we kind of close in towards the end here, because I think there's some other stuff I want to get to first. But yeah, interesting. That is definitely something that's going to be smoldering here through the rest of the season. So, we're going to just see how many more we can get in before the end of the show.
Right. It would be a lot better if I could control my laughter every time you say it. Okay.
All right.
I could start saying it again though.
No, that's cool, man. We're good. No, seriously. So we've got the other storyline with, Ada and Dr. Radcliffe and May, and then Fitz and Simmons kind of come in on the end of that. So
Now, real quick before we – did you notice – well, or let me tell you what I noticed. Right at the beginning, that very first scene when Ada was talking to May.
Yes.
When they first showed her, I already noticed a difference just in her talking before they said anything about it. I'm like, oh, they've been working on her a little bit. She sounds a little bit more real. I either thought that they'd been working on her or she was starting to acquire a little bit of –
Huh, interesting.
What do you call it? You know, like androids and robots and stuff.
Sentience.
Yeah, something like that. I don't know. I've been watching Westworld, so that's on my mind, I guess.
A lot of people have. I've been hearing good stuff about that. So
yeah, it's not a bad show. But, yeah. So I noticed it right away. So
oh, that's good.
Really, really good job writing that character, and also, of course, performing the character from Mallory Jansen there. So I love this storyline. This is awesome.
I did not notice anything, but I mean, it was mentioned by Radcliffe later in the episode that, you know, they've been working on her, what, micro expressions and other things like that. Basically, having the more she's around people, like real people, it sounds like she learns and picks up, you know, the mannerisms and stuff like that. But Simmons sees through this immediately when she shows up at the end of the episode. Whereas Fitz is Fitz's expression is like, "Hey, Ada's out." Ah! And he's such a nervous Nelly about this. It was just,
well, in his defense, the first time he saw her out, she was naked. So, you know, I mean, you never know when she's
yeah. But
well, hey, but he has a legitimate reason to be kind of nervous about it, because if Simmons finds out about it, he knows that she is bound to the director to not lie, or as we found out, you know, she'll be taking a test.
Yeah, she takes these lie detector tests. We found it. We actually heard that a couple weeks ago, I think, on the season premiere, or if not the episode after.
Oh, that's right. I had forgotten about that. But so I think he's more concerned because he doesn't want – he doesn't want him to be called out. You know, he doesn't want to be caught.
Yeah.
He wants to continue with it a little bit. But anyway, that was a good scene. I like how he kind of played it off. Oh, yeah, she's beautiful. I like the more classical beauty. But he thought she was jealous.
Right. Well, because he wasn't sure that she knew at that point. He thought she was just talking about the fact that there was a beautiful woman there. So
right.
Now – I'm going to ask this question. Does May know it? Because there was they kind of did that, like she does know, but then it was just, oh, we're all mistaking what she's saying and she doesn't appear to know. But what are your thoughts? You're pretty good at reading into that there.
My thoughts are right here in my notes, in my notebook. And as I'm watching this, I'm like, May is on to Ada, ? Because at first
Nailed
I thought
it.
She did. At first I thought she kind of did. No. I'm like, oh, look at that. She knows. And then they started talking again. I'm like, wait a second. I don't think she realizes.
Right.
So I don't actually think she knows.
Right. Because it was like she was like, I'm on to you. Like, you know, where have you been keeping her? And then it's like, oh, she's a great – you know, a nurse or whatever. Good.
Yeah.
And it's, oh, she's from Canada. That's how she speaks Chinese. And
those Chinese Canadians. I also thought Coulson might know at the end. And then he changed my mind as he started talking to him. So I think Simmons is the only one that knows.
And that's terrible because, of course, she has to take these lie detector tests.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
Did we actually see Holden – Radcliffe teach Ada how to lie? Up to this point, you know, she says that she is, you know, she's bound by certain programming, right? I'm sure it sounds like there were some mention of at least one or two of the laws of robotics. Isaac Asimov's famous laws of robotics, one which is a robot will not hurt a human being or by inaction allow a human being to be hurt, and whatever the other ones are. Which I didn't look up, but there's some
other things robots should not.
Other things robots should
robots
not do to
should
people.
Not eat an hour before swimming. I think was the second one. But
so he, you know, basically every time she's around people, she's learning from them, and then Fitz lies about her, and so then she asks, you know, well, why did he lie? And we've gotten, you know, we get some explanation and stuff there, but I'm wondering if, like, now is part of her programming, does she understand how to lie, or is it one of those things where she's thinks she understands how to lie, but she's going to do it and it's something's going to backfire and or reveal something about her?
Yeah, I think that's going to happen sooner rather than later. Then I think – so I'm going to do a little speculating on Ada here. What I think is she'll be discovered very soon. There'll be some arguments about her moral – the moral decision to create her, right?
Okay.
Then eventually she'll be kind of put into action since she's already made and stuff like that. Well, you did it, so let's just go ahead and test her. and then I think – by the end of the season or by mid-season, I hope it's not mid-season, she's going to end up sacrificing herself to save everybody. That's my prediction for Ada.
Okay. That's interesting that you say she's going to sacrifice herself, because I heard a line that Radcliffe said to her. And because, remember, she's very childlike and she's very literal. And I never feel like any of the words that these writers, these excellent writers, use on this show are by happenstance. And so there was one line where she asks Holden, like, well, why did Fitz lie? Like, you told me it's, you know, we're not supposed to lie. And he says, it's okay to lie to shield people from certain truth, to spare their feelings, or save a life. And so on one level, it's like, okay, so she now has three examples of when it's okay to lie, like to save a life, right? That sounds like that's part of her initial programming. But the fact that he used the word shield, it's okay to lie to shield people. And then he pauses for a microsecond before he says from certain truth. I read that as not as to shield people, but it's okay to lie to shield, S-H-I-E-L-D, people. So now he's basically given her permission to lie to people that work for shield.
I heard that too.
And
I heard it stood out to me, even though I don't think he said it in a way that stood out. It was just, I heard the word and I thought the same thing you did.
It wasn't even the editing and they didn't like zoom in. He goes, it's okay to lie to shield. And they do the zoom in, but no, they didn't do anything like that. Now it could just
little
be
90s dramatic musical pause.
Yeah. It could be that that's just a coincidence and, or maybe they did choose the word to throw people like us off a little bit. But, I think this will play into, the next thing I want to talk about is the fact that Simmons knows. So I think it'll give Ada permission to deny, like if Simmons confronts her or if she is, quote, found out and people try to, you know, get her to admit that she's a robot or something like that, she'll say, no, of course not. So we'll see.
Okay. And she didn't come straight out and say that. I guess she hasn't really become good at lying yet. So
right.
Maybe she wouldn't come straight out. She almost did come straight out and say she was an android.
Oh, how long have you been giving Dr. Radcliffe a hand? Since he gave me hands. It's like, whoa, hello. So I just thought it was funny because, of course, Coulson was talking about that, and he's thinking, oh, yeah, I've got a fake hand too, that Radcliffe
hey,
helped Fitz out.
We can be robot hand buddies.
Yay. Wait, that's weird. So Simmons knows the secret now. Simmons is very instrumental in many scenes. She knows about Daisy. Oh, can't lie about that. Well, what about if I hold a gun on you? And then she can convincingly say, Daisy held a gun on me, without actually lying, and then get out of that. But Fitz says, this is one thing you can't lie about, that you have to lie about, I mean. Again, shortly after we get this whole little when is it okay to lie speech from Dr. Radcliffe. So we heard about the lie detector. I guess it was episode 2 because it was the first time we saw the director. It might have been episode 1. But she seems still kind of fearful of the director. But I'm wondering if she might report to somebody else. She has said she works for the director as the whatever the liaison, the science and technology liaison and stuff like that. But also, at another point in the episode with Daisy, Simmons says she is the boss. And she demonstrates this in a really hilarious scene where she has to go up to Agent Adele, or I think it is, or something like that.
And she said, what'd she say, hello? Sorry.
How are you?
Exactly. So she's supposed to be breaking in to get this flash drive in there somehow, right?
Yeah.
And it's that was awesome. As I watched that scene, the only thing I could think of is, man, this really would have changed the Mission Impossible movie if they'd just done it like that.
Right.
wouldn't have been nearly as exciting, but it worked in this.
So Simmons is up high enough that she is, you know, able to have authority over other individuals. Also, I mean, it seems like she's the head of the science and technology division as well. But she still has to report to the director, yet she also is taking these, I guess they're like weekly lie detector tests.
Yes, like the ones you give me.
It's for your own good.
I know.
Something seems really weird about that, because she keeps talking about these lie detector tests. Like, it's like they're really hitting it over the head. Like, remember, Simmons takes lie detector tests. And everything we've seen with the director right now, he's like super cool. Hey, you're a super cool guy, man. You know, he's like buddy-buddy with Coulson. Coulson knows his secret. You know, they're working together. He doesn't seem like this hard ass that everybody tries to portray him as when they talk about him, like that the characters seem more afraid of him. I can't explain this, but it seems like there's a disconnect between what some characters are seeing and what we're seeing, or what characters are saying and what we're seeing.
Well, and that disconnect comes from the fact that the main team, right? Coulson and May and Fitz and Simmons and Mac. Okay, that's our team. Those are our heroes. Those are the main characters in the show, the ones we root for, the ones we want to win, the ones we want to beat the bad guy. And if they don't trust the director as the audience, we're not going to trust the director either. He has not given us any reason whatsoever to not trust him. As a matter of fact, just the opposite. So we have these very contradictory feelings about him because of what we know as an audience we're supposed to feel for the heroes.
Right. Like when he comes on screen, my stomach feels funny. It is. Yeah, it's contradictory. So you're right. That's a really good explanation for it, though.
And yeah, so I still don't know, because these are heroes. So I still don't trust the guy. Plus, I don't know. I have a hard time trusting anybody that's that happy all the time. So
yeah, there's definitely that. So I think there's something else going on there, and they never give us enough in the teasers or in like the name of the next episode for me to go, oh my gosh, it's going to be this. So.
No, I know. I haven't seen any. Although, now, even knowing the origins of this character, not that they're bound by that by any means whatsoever, but even the origins of this character is a good guy.
Yeah.
He's a hero. So, you know, it could come down to him making some decisions that they really don't agree with philosophically. Huh? Phil Coulson-esophically. But he has to do them anyway. It's like a hard decision, like a no-win situation for him.
Yeah.
And then in the end, maybe he'll end up sacrificing himself.
Well,
maybe he and Ada will end up sacrificing himself. It'll be like that scene in Star Trek: The Motion Picture where they both go off into the disco lights.
And
you
they
know?
Bond, with V'ger. maybe with the fact that he's an Inhuman and we've got all this Inhuman stuff coming to a head, which also reminds me now that we didn't. See, I was so excited with the episode that they did a great job. I just realized that we didn't get any more stuff with the senator and her Inhuman brother in the cocoon.
Oh, that's right.
So, but we've got all that stuff coming to a head. We got the watchdogs looking around for people to kill. All it's going to take is hopefully there's nothing in the S.H.I.E.L.D. computer system, because apparently no one, I guess, knows about the fact that the director is an Inhuman, except for Phil. So hopefully there's nothing in the computer about that that James was able to leak.
I would think that he's probably not in there. He doesn't wear, obviously doesn't wear the watch. Or the, mm-hmm. the whatever they call that. And Coulson seems to be the only one that knows. I'm assuming maybe the president doesn't know. But didn't the president appoint him?
Yeah, but that doesn't necessarily mean that the president knows.
No, it doesn't. So to keep that huge secret, I would assume he's not in that database, which they need to take care of right away. So as soon as Simmons gets back, she needs to set up some kind of firewall or something.
Lock it down. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, James is actually working with the watchdogs. He's been stealing the information by actually allowing the watchdogs to, Daisy said something like, do a backtrace through his watch. Like basically since his watch has to, you know, feeds information back to the shield servers, they were able to use that to get into the shield servers. However, they did that hacking wise.
Is that what the government's doing with my Apple Watch?
Probably. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Man,
I'm just checking.
They can tell how fast your heart's beating and all sorts of stuff like that. So,
okay.
But with James being back, he is, he's still a real big jerk. He is such a big jerk. His name should really be Richard, or a shortened version of that. I can't understand the question that I wrote down here to ask.
You're asking me, right? Do you think that the watchdogs are going to let him live?
Oh, right. Yeah.
I had a question about that question.
Okay.
Didn't he say or imply that he didn't want to live, that he was going to be the last one that they took out?
That is true. He was not happy with his day job, and
I got the impression that he wanted to die. He didn't want to be an inhuman. He was fine in his life, but he wanted to take all the inhumans out with him, and so he's going to let the watchdogs have that information, and he's going to be the last one that they take out.
I think he just really – I mean, he needs to get some help because – I mean, he did want to be an inhuman, and they mentioned this, like, you know, it's like, what's going on, man? You wanted to be an inhuman so bad, and he's like, not like this. I want you to take it back. That's what it was. And then, yeah, and then, you know, does he think that the watchdogs are really going to let him live? But as you point out, he doesn't really seem like he wants to live. So, yeah, that may be I guess it doesn't matter now. I mean, if he's taken prisoner again by S.H.I.E.L.D.,
Maybe.
Watchdogs.
Yeah, maybe. Well, I guess that part doesn't matter, but they kept him alive, so they're going to keep James.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering where it's going to go. Is he going to get that help? Or are they going to try to give him that help? Or is he going to break out and become another threat and kind of join up with... We still don't know really who's funding the watchdogs and who's in charge.
Right. There's still the funding, and we've got the senator that's working with him. Maybe James knows something about either one of those characters that he can assist with. Now, I thought for a moment before James revealed his true colors that he was going to be working with Daisy on the sly, and I thought, oh, my gosh, look, she's making another little Secret Warriors group outside of S.H.I.E.L.D. here, but that was short-lived. That's not the case.
Yeah, I will admit to you, I mean, at first, you know, I was kind of worried about James, and I was kind of thought he was a fun character to watch.
But oh, yeah, he's a train wreck. Back.
But as soon as he said, meet me at the storage units later or 10 o'clock tonight or whatever he said, I didn't trust him right there. I'm like, why? Why are you waiting so long? Why? I don't understand. So as soon as he did that, I was a little suspicious of him.
Well, we had to fight fire with fire with him here because Ghost Rider shows up, as we mentioned earlier, and they duke it out. And I have to tell you, I guess this is a credit to the show when it comes down to it, Josh, the fact that the show engages me so much. I'm not thinking ahead of plot twists. I mean, I'm – I'm thinking on my feet as I'm watching this, and I'm like, oh my gosh, wait, this is a bad situation for this character, whatever. But this is the second week now they've gotten me with this super obvious plot device. And Coulson even calls it out on this one. So last week, if you recall, I mentioned that I wasn't even thinking about the fact that the blackouts were happening, and I was all, oh good, they're going to get May, you know, 3, 2, and boom, then the lights go out and turns off the power and they can't save May. And I was like, ah. So this week, right, they got two fire dudes fighting in a firework factory. And like I said, Coulson calls it out. I'm like, oh my gosh, yeah, of course this is going to result in a not a good situation.
Next week, Mac has a hand-to-hand fight in a glass shop. So.
Actually, can we make it a China shop?
And then, oh, sure.
That would be good. So, as we mentioned, I think that was a really cool fight. I like the fact that he had, were those croquet balls that he was charging?
Oh yeah, that was cool.
Rolling them around.
I like that. Now, I will say one other thing about the fireworks explosion that just be aware, people, if you are going to be a witness to two fire dudes fighting in a fireworks place, the fireworks are not all going to go up. Some of them are going to shoot outward. So just keep that in mind and maybe run a little further.
Yeah. Yeah, they were actually quite close to the explosions, but yeah. So what? And again, we see Robbie is an honorable guy. He was asked to bring James back alive, and he brings him back alive.
Yes, he did.
Even though
he doesn't bring many back alive.
No. Usually they're just little piles of ash. So Daisy's kind of back in the fold now. I felt that Simmons talking to her and working with her earlier in the episode was going to help out in getting Daisy to resume communication, at least with the team. But Daisy, it seems like she's going to get the help she needs. She's going to be back with the team. But Coulson is obviously acting very cold to her. Now, he's not director anymore, but he's still her friend, or he thought he was. Is he just feeling a little burned right there by her attitude, or is he being spiteful, do you think? Or is it really honest, emotional, discomfort that he's feeling?
Oh, I think it's real honest emotional discomfort. I think it's going to take a while for them to mend their relationship. I think he's really angry with her, and the fact that she wasn't asking them for help, she was running directly from them, and then she was, you know, having things stolen for her own benefit from S.H.I.E.L.D. and getting people to help her in S.H.I.E.L.D., you know, so I think he's going to be very angry. Mac is obviously angry. We've seen that since he found out that Yo-Yo was helping her.
Right.
But I think it's going to take a while.
And Simmons was angry too, but they seem to kind of work out their issues. I mean, they had a little spat earlier.
I don't know that Simmons was angry as so much like a saddened parent, you know, like, why didn't you just come to me for help? I would have been there. You know what I mean? Like if you found out your kid was drinking at a high school party or something like that.
Yeah.
And you know, so that's more how Simmons, I took it with her. I think it's a lot more personal with Mac and Coulson. But I am, you know what, I am glad though that Daisy is I thought they did a really good job of explaining why she's got all these injuries with her powers.
Oh,
because Simmons asked her about the gauntlets. Have you been wearing the gauntlets? Because the gauntlets will help prevent a lot of this stuff. And she explained that she couldn't because they would give her away. She was in disguise or incognito, and she didn't want those gauntlets on there. So maybe now she can use her powers without being so dangerous to herself.
Yeah.
You know, if she's back with S.H.I.E.L.D., which I will like to see, because I want to see her have the ability to use these powers without worrying she's going to die.
Right. Well, and it's also a great way to power her down a little bit. So, you know, she can't use her powers just to get out of everything.
Oh, that's true. That's true. I didn't even think about that. That's a great, great thing to have.
Yeah, a little plot device, but not so overt that that it's, you know, super noticeable.
Oh, fantastic subtle little things like that in this episode. I mean, even so much as the blood smear on the wall or on the door after Daisy kind of corners Simmons in the apartment there. Just nice little touches in this episode like that.
Right. Well, and especially since we knew Daisy was already injured, you know, and we thought it was just kind of her arm and stuff. And then she slides down and you see this blood coming out of her back and you're like, oh no, she's hurt way more than we thought. Like she said, she got shot. I mean, you know, stuff happens in between the episodes. So it was really, really good episode. Each episode keeps building on the other. Like I said, I didn't realize that we didn't get stuff with the senator again. But I'm looking forward to getting back to that storyline. Hopefully we'll jump back into that and a little bit more with the director, maybe see the lie detector test at the beginning of the next episode. That would be kind of cool. So we'll see how that goes. We did get a couple pieces of feedback here. I'm going to take the first one. Stephanie from Facebook wanted to write in here and let us know. She said, hey guys, great show. Wanted to comment on something you were speculating on. At one point you asked whether you thought Gabriel knows that Robbie is Ghost Rider. And she goes on to remind everybody here that Josh theorized that he knows and thinks Daisy will interfere, interfere with that. Jay theorized that he doesn't know and he has a bias against Inhumans and wants Daisy gone because of all that. She says, I agree with Jay that Gabriel doesn't know, but I think that he has a bias against all not against all Inhumans, but just Daisy. He figured out she's Quake and knows that all the illegal stuff she's been up to, because that's the stuff that's been in the newspaper clippings and stuff that we saw at the end of last season. And he doesn't want his brother involved in any of that. I think that's why he wanted her gone. He just didn't want his brother to be around a bad influence. So keep up the good work.
A great thought. I think I'm still sticking with that he might know, though. But, you know, having Daisy there, because he knows she's Quake, will drag him into situations that could potentially put him in more danger than he already is. So,
yeah,
I don't know. I mean, he knows that Robbie's up to a bunch of stuff. Robbie's hardly ever home anyway. So
right.
I still think he knows something.
Okay. All right. And why don't you take this this tweet we got here?
Yes. Benjamin, he said on Twitter, I like this. The most outlandish thing about this week's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., that a guy the size of Mac could fit in a car the size of Lola. And he also said he's surprised Coulson wasn't worried about having permanent knee grooves in his dash on the passenger side. Hashtag been there, done that.
Yeah, good point, Benjamin. As I pointed out on the response to the tweet, Coulson did say something about the fact that there's no way Mac was going to be able to drive because he wouldn't fit behind the steering wheel. But I don't know. I've never had a car that small or B been that tall. So, but I can definitely see the difficulties with that. So got a couple references I want to add in here. Interesting cross references. You know, just little things that they put in the episode, like you were mentioning earlier. This one, when Eli gets the call when he's in prison, that the fact that there's someone to see him, he's reading a book. And, you know, I'm one of those people, it's like, oh, I wonder what book he's reading, because sometimes they just have him reading, you know, they just grab a book. But a lot of time, they grab a book that is thematically appropriate for a character to be reading. In this case, he's reading The Positronic Man by Isaac Asimov and who's the co-author on this?
Robert Silverberg.
Robert Silverberg. So this is based off of Asimov's novelette, The Bicentennial Man, which people may recognize as the title of a Robin Williams movie from, I don't know, like 10 years ago or so, about a robot that is displaying characteristics that lead it to be classified as a human being. Very similar to Ada. So I don't know that the two storylines are going to come together, but I thought it's interesting because it does relate to the story and the episode as a whole.
It does. I think I read this book in high school. I kind of remember it.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think I might have read the short story at one point, and I know I saw the movie. And then we got a reference that Coulson pointed out that Daniel Whitehall, the Red Skull, and Nick Fury have all looked for the Darkhold at different times, but no one's been able to find it. And so so I'm sure Coulson and his team will be able to do that.
Well, they didn't try to stick their fingers in Joseph's head. That's why that he couldn't find it, see?
Oh, okay. Well, we don't know that Lucy's actually been able to find it. I mean, she knows, I think, where to go, I think is what we got from that, but I don't know. You know, is she going to, like, she's incorporeal. How's she going to get it? I don't know. It's
That's a good question.
Interesting things like that.
wouldn't that be a drag, man? Like you're messed up. You thought you were dead. It turns out you're a ghost. There's one thing on the planet that can save you. You find it after nobody else has found it, and you can't use it because you can't open the book.
That would be a humorous scene where she's trying to flip the pages and it's like.
Oh, I think that whole scene was in that. That song by, what was that ironic song back in the day?
Oh, Alanis Morissette?
Yeah, Alanis Morissette, yeah.
Yeah. And then I miss this because I'm not a big video game player, but the writer of the episode, Matt Owens, is obviously a huge Overwatch fan. I found a little piece from Kotaku.com, which is... one of the old Gawker sites, and they pointed out that they thought that the writer might have been a fan of Overwatch because James quotes a character from the game called Junkrat, and it's basically like two or three lines that he says to the kids when he's messing around with the firework when we first are introduced to him, and then a couple lines that he says to Daisy towards the end in the storage facility are the exact lines that Junkrat says, like when, you know, his little taunt lines or something like that he does. And the writer confirmed this, I guess, on Twitter. He said, "Yep, that's what I was doing." And he said he tried to give, I think it was like Simmons, a couple quotes as well, but he couldn't do direct quotes because Simmons talks different than the character that he was trying to use as a reference. So there are some more oblique Overwatch references in this episode, but anyone who's played Overwatch probably picked up on these, and I guess I just don't know anything about that.
Well, I like when they throw stuff in there that influences them.
Yeah, and it's great. You know, you've got... writers who were fans of other things, and it's, you know, it's fun to put little links in that. And I guess Junkrat uses bombs and flaming things similar to the way James does. So I think that's also how it fits in. So, well, it looks like we're going a little long here, Josh. So I think that's about all we've got for this week's episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files. I'd like to thank everybody for joining us again for another week, and we will obviously not have any more singing, at least for the rest of this episode.
All right. All right. I think I can handle that. So, well, I had a great time talking about this episode. Very fun. And I hope you guys did too. We would love to hear from all you guys that are listening, and welcome all the new listeners as well. So if you could go over on iTunes and leave us some feedback, we would love to hear from you and get some new feedback over on iTunes to spread the word. Also, if you want to just leave us a message like Benjamin and Stephanie did, there's lots of ways to do it. Send us an email at shield@randomchatter.com, or go to Twitter at Agents Podcast, or you can visit our Facebook page at facebook.com/agentspodcast.
You can also check out the other shows that Josh and I host, including Green Justice and Arrow Podcast and Scarlet Velocity, a Flash Podcast, available at randomchatter.com. You can also find the shows in the iTunes Store or through Stitcher for Android or iOS. And if you're enjoying the podcast, please be sure to share us with your friends. Don't hog it all to yourself. So for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files, this is Jay.
And this is Josh.
Signing off from Level 7. This podcast is not endorsed by ABC Television or Marvel Entertainment. The official website for Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. can be found at www.agentsofshield.com. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and related elements are copyright Marvel Entertainment, LLC.
Transmission terminated.
Let me stand next to your fire.